you know, here in Alaska, it's all glacially carved. So the mountains that are above the water also extend down beneath the water. And right off the shoreline, there's 100-foot walls and beyond. So the whales can literally swim right next to the rocks where we're out snorkeling.
Hi, I'm Reet Singh, and welcome to the Trip Outside podcast. On this show, I interview local guides and outdoor industry experts to uncover the best outdoor travel spots and epic outdoor activities. Before we jump in, I have a quick favor to ask you. If you enjoy the show, please leave us a comment and let us know what you liked or what you'd like to hear next. Our goal is to help answer all of your outdoor adventure travel questions. I hope you enjoy the show.
All right, Frederick, thanks so much for joining me. I am super excited to talk to you about snorkeling in Alaska, things that don't typically go together in a sentence. So the first question I have for you is, can you describe the unique aspects of snorkeling in Alaska, especially compared to like tropical locations where you typically think about snorkeling?
Yeah, it's a completely different experience, obviously. And I think most people, when they hear about snorkeling in Alaska, they think they're going to freeze and they think there's going to be nothing to see. And we have proven just the opposite. We have really thick wetsuits that are all state of the art. Water temperatures get up to 65 here in the summertime. And there's just a plethora of marine life. So as soon as you put your face in the water, there's colors, there's fish, there's kelps and plants and invertebrates. And it's a completely different experience from snorkeling in the tropical locations. And you just got to have the open mind to give it a go.
Sounds amazing. That actually answered a couple of my questions about, you know, what you would wear for cold water snorkeling, as opposed to what you would wear in warmer climates. So just thicker wetsuits can really solve for that feeling of being cold.
Yeah, we got 7mm wetsuits, hoods, boots, and gloves. And then, of course, all the standard equipment, mask, fins, snorkels. And a wetsuit works by filling up with a thin layer of water. It gets trapped inside and heats up to body temperature. So wetsuits are tight fitting. And that's how they keep you warm. So they're a bit restrictive, but without it, of course, we couldn't hop in the water here.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the wildlife and underwater features. Like, what are, can you go a bit more into specific wildlife maybe they can only find in Alaska or is unique to the area? Or, you know, how does that differ maybe from tropical places too? Or, and then like, what are some things that you get really excited to see when you do see that?
Yeah, you know, when we get in the water here, it's not going to be as clear as the Caribbean. It's not 100 feet of visibility, and there's not a coral reef. There's a rock reef covered with all different kinds of plants and algae, so there's kelps. And then the invertebrate life is where our colors lie, so sea stars are very abundant. Purples, orange, red, sea urchins, again, purple, orange, and green. There's sea cucumbers out there. The fish, instead of being tropical colored, are more muted to match the backgrounds, which is the browns and greens that are in the kelps and the algaes. We get wolf eel encounters out there, sometimes sea lions. We actually had a river otter in the ocean with us on tour, harbor seals, and then the occasional whale comes swimming by, from humpbacks to orcas. You just really never know. That's the kind of stuff that really gets us excited, as a pod of orcas is cruising by and people are screaming and freaking out. They think they're gonna be attacked by an orca, but orcas don't eat people. There's never been a documented attack of a human in the wild. Only the trainers in captivity have ever been attacked by orcas. So I've actually snorkeled with orcas twice, seen them underwater, humpback whale a couple of times, but a lot of sea lions, you know, and then just the random different fish out there. We get these giant lingcod. We have seasonal variations from spring to fall. In the springtime, the lingcod are in shallow waters sitting on their nests of eggs. We can check those out. We offer optional weight belts so people can free dive, and we have a really steep rock wall that drops off about 100 feet right off the shoreline. So that's really exciting to take a weight belt and dive down the wall.
Wow, that sounds incredible. And my wife, Julie, had an opportunity to swim with orcas or snorkel with orcas in Baja California.
Oh, yeah.
This January and February. So, yeah, it was a really great experience. So they shared the same stats about attacks on humans. So it's really nice to know that, you know, the whales aren't the problem. It's all the other things that are going to kill you way first.
I feel bad for the whales. There's so much boat traffic out there. It's so, you know, wherever they go, people want to see whales. And so we've got cruise ships, we've got fishing boats, we've got whale watching boats, we've got misty fjord boats. And, you know, underwater, it's kind of noisy, you know, like you can hear the boats. And I don't, you know, the poor whales, I just feel like they get harassed all the time.
Yeah, that's a great point. Is there a way to like paddle out there and do the snorkeling, or do you guys do boats? Like,
we actually have to snorkel go pretty far off of, out. We snorkel off the beach, off a rocky
that's
shore.
That's amazing.
Yep. So, that's and great. We're, our site is 5 miles from town. It's right on the road system. We snorkel from a rocky beach, but you know, here in Alaska, it's all glacially carved. So the mountains that are above the water also extend down beneath the water. And right off the shoreline, there's 100-foot walls and beyond. So the whales can literally swim right next to the rocks where we're out snorkeling. Pretty cool.
That's incredible. Yeah. That environmentally, we always want to think about how to promote things that are most sustainable and eco-friendly. So that's great to hear that you have. I think we need to create a filter for that says like off the shore snorkeling, because even for time sakes, it's, you know, really great to just start and end at the shore.
Yep. And then we're also using the new wetsuits. Scuba Pro's got these new wetsuits that are made from all like recycled materials. They're getting away from neoprene rubbers. And so that's pretty exciting news from Scuba Pro. If you check out their website, you can read all about that. It's called Ulex. It's a new type of wetsuit material. And so that's pretty exciting instead of the old standard neoprene rubber.
Yeah, actually, we're in the market for a couple of wetsuits because we're going down to Baja again. So I will definitely check those out.
Where do you go in Baja?
We go all the way down to Cabo and back, typically.
Yeah, I go to La Ventana. I'm a kite surfer, so I spend a lot of time.
I saw that.
La Ventana, saw that in your... La Paz, okay, Cabo. At least once a year, I head down to La Ventana for a kite trip.
Well, I would love to link up with you. I started getting into kiting last year, and that's my goal, is to get into it further.
Oh, La Ventana is the hot spot, man. It really is. Go to La Ventana for a month, buy a set of gear, and I've been dialed. I even kite here in Alaska.
Oh, wow. Incredible. Right where you are in Ketchikan?
Yep. There's a place we can do it if the tide's low. We got a beach to launch from. I wear a dry suit, like a fabric kayaking style dry suit. So I got some flexibility and mobility. But yeah, I love kiting. It's really a great sport.
So with that, I think that actually leads into, you know, what are the best times of year to book a snorkeling trip in Alaska for the best conditions, especially given that you travel and leave for, you know, trips. Are you there seasonally or are you operating all year?
We only operate from about May through September. That's when the cruise ships are here. So 99% of our bookings come from cruise ship passengers. So the ships come in April. So like, I think we're going to have our first tour April 25th. Some ships come earlier than that, but we like to focus on the peak of the season. So from late April to late September, early October, and then conditions vary throughout that time. The water is coldest, of course, in April and in May, but it's also the clearest. So you might have super clear waters, but it's colder. As things warm up, the fish become more active. You get more fish activity in June and July. The water gets up to 65 degrees, but then you can get some reduced visibility. So plankton and algaes can come into play. And then come August, September, it starts to cool off again and it gets clearer. Any time of year for us in the summer, it's, you know, it can be. The conditions can vary greatly just based on what the plankton and the algaes are doing, but summer is the peak of the year. June, July, and August is when most of our visitors come through. We got the longest daylight hours, the warmest water. So yeah, we love the warm water, but I like the clear water the best. So spring and April, May, August, September tend to have the best visibility.
Yeah, I'll take the cold over for the visibility any day as well.
Yep.
So, yeah. So with the level of experience needed, what levels of snorkeling experience do you accommodate, and how do you make sure that it's a great experience for like both beginners and advanced snorkelers?
That's a great question. We can take anybody out there as long as they don't have heart problems, respiratory disorders, history of seizures or fainting, and they fall within our weight guidelines, 80 to 260 pounds. And we've dropped our suggested age to 65, just because folks that are elderly don't have the mobility, maybe not as in good a shape. That's not set in stone, but you know, we've had people in their 90s come out and do the tour. But we don't, if they're a first time snorkeler, even if they can't swim, we can take them snorkeling in Alaska. The wetsuit makes you float like a cork. It's like a full body life jacket. Beginning first time snorkelers, non-swimmers, we say, hey, don't take a weight belt. You're going to float super comfortably out there. We provide full instructions on all the tours. And then we always have a minimum of two guides in the water for just 10 people. Let's say we got five people that have never snorkeled before, five people that are certified scuba divers or free divers, then we can split the group up and always makes sure it's exciting for everybody. People who are more experienced snorkelers, we always encourage them to take a weight belt. And then one of the guides can take them to where the deeper waters are and let them free dive away, you know, as deep as they want to go, really. I mean, I've had guests hit 50 feet with me out there before. And then the folks that maybe don't want to do that can stay in the shallower waters. And throughout, we're doing this, you know, guided marine life tour, telling them about the marine life. Limited handling of some of the stuff. And that's a real departure from anywhere you go in the world. They tell you, don't touch anything. Don't stand on the bottom. Well, we don't have a coral reef, so standing on the bottom generally is not an issue. And certain creatures, sea urchins, some of the sea stars, and the cucumbers, those are the things that we will pick up as tour guides. We'll hand them to the guests, let them take photos, pass them around, and then we collect them back and stick them in the proper depth and habitat. And we do that on a very limited basis. And, you know, over 25 years of doing this, we've never had any damaging or detrimental effects to the marine life. Obviously, that wouldn't make for a good snorkel tour if we're killing all the creatures out there. So we're very careful about it. We tell people, look, but don't touch, unless it's something we bring up to them. Certain things are best left alone. Like, we're not picking up the nudibranchs, you know, certain sea stars. If you bring them up from depth, they fill with air if you hold them above the water. So there's certain things, those true stars that are purple and orange, they get stuck above the tide every 6 hours. You know, the tides very go 20 feet in 6 hours. So we can safely handle a limited amount of the marine life. And that, again, is a very big departure from what they teach you as in dive classes and anywhere else you go. Don't touch anything, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, that's great to see. Great to hear that. Yeah, it's just a unique opportunity to interact with wildlife without having a negative impact on them. That actually leads me into the next question about how do environmental conservation efforts play a role in your snorkeling tours? Do you feel that people feel more connected to sea life? And I imagine, you know, they get to experience sea life that they've never seen before and maybe work towards protecting these areas for the future. And second, you know, along with that, do you do any conservation efforts as part of your tours, or do you have organizations in the area that we can highlight and bring light to that are doing some conservation work?
You know, we've always strived to have the least amount of impact, you know, at our site in the water, the products we use, like paper cups instead of styrofoam. And yeah, marine life education, we're always talking about, you know, our creatures out there. And, you know, I've seen environmental changes over the years. I've been in the water here at Mountain Point since 94 was the first time I took a snorkel group out there. That's when I worked on the cruise ships. And obviously we have cruise ships. There's great environmental impacts with these ships here. And there are, you know, conservation groups in Alaska that are anti-cruise ship. We don't have cruise ships. We don't have business. Now, they've been pretty strictly regulated here, whereas they can't dump gray water in the inside waters and all this kind of stuff. So, you know, I worked on the ships for 7 years. Cruising is very wasteful. The amount of food that's thrown away, you know, God, the garbage and all that. Yeah, it's hard. I'm challenged because I need those people to come out and do our tour. But at the same time, how many ships is too many coming to Alaska? We have 1.5 million visitors. Some days there's seven ships in port. It's extreme, you know? And so,
no, thanks for sharing that. I mean, the impacts that you talked about is the main focus, really, because, you know, you could reduce the impact, negative impact first, and really bringing light to that is important. So I would think you would prefer that people fly in or get to Ketchikan, right? Hang out for a while, and instead of just taking a cruise and like dropping in and leaving, I imagine.
Yeah, and that's but what we get though. I mean, these ships come in, some of them are only in port for 6 or 7 hours, and
right,
you know, it's crazy. It is a crazy industry. And I worked on the ships back in the 90s, late 80s, and oh my God, the things we saw. You know, I was on the world's largest cruise ship in 1992. It was called the SS Norway. And they would take all the ship's garbage in gigantic hefty bags and throw it overboard. And myself and, you know, we're divers. We're in the water. You know, they're throwing garbage bags directly off the ship and into the water. We got with some of the photographers on board and they videotaped it and submitted it all to the Coast Guard and blew the whistle, you know, like, my God, it was... And now they don't do that anymore, obviously. But they were literally throwing garbage.
Thank you for doing that. Yeah.
Imagine a cruise ship throwing garbage into the sea as it's pulling away from St. Martin. Gigantic black trash bags. Yeah, it was horrible.
I really hope, you know, we're going to share a part of this message. I really hope we can convince people to travel differently, you know, visit places, stay longer. It's never been easier with people that have the privilege to do remote work. You know, to experience a place more deeply instead of just, you know, popping in and popping out. And mm-hmm. with that, you know, living in Ketchikan, what are some outdoor activities that you like to do? And what are some things that you would recommend if somebody visited for longer?
There's so much to do here, you know, from all the different guided tours. But to go on your own, you can grab a backpack. You can hike up the mountain. There's 4 service cabins you can stay in. We love to go fishing, snorkeling and harvesting scallops and abalone, and you know, we fish for halibut and salmon. We got a very small boat. We love to go camping. You know, there's just so many outdoor activities. So a lot of our lives off work are focused in boating, fishing, camping. I'm a mountain biker, again, the kite surfing. There's great kayaking. Misty Fjords is about 25 miles away. You can get a boat to drop you and your kayaks off out there, spend a week paddling around the Misty Fjords, you know, bears everywhere. And it's just a wonderful outdoorsman's paradise for all that kind of stuff, fishing, camping, mountain biking, kayaking. The hikes around here are amazing. You know, you can hike to the top of a mountain right off from the cruise ship. You can get off the ship and walk up to the top of Deer Mountain. It's 3,000 feet to the summit. Takes about 2.5 hours or so to get up there. And from there, that trail goes 13 miles to the end of the road. So it's called the Traverse. People take 10 to 12 hours to do it. Again, we've got 4 service cabins scattered all about that you can take a float plane to get to. The fishing opportunities are amazing. Fly fishing, salmon fishing, halibut fishing, all that kind of stuff.
Man, sounds incredible. I can't wait to go out there. Can you tell me more about the mountain biking? I'm a mountain biker myself, so I'd love to learn a bit more about the type of trails and what you could expect.
Yep. The mountain biking here is somewhat limited, but we've got some pretty decent trails that we can go on and, you know, a lot of different loops that we can do. It's very steep here, though, so it's very mountainous, but there are a lot of logging roads that go back up into the hills. And then if you take your bike and a boat and you go out to some of the more remote locations, you can actually access a lot of these logging roads where you won't really see anybody. But yeah, there's definitely lots of good places to get out in the woods and do some mountain biking.
Amazing. All right. Last question I have, and thank you so much for your incredible knowledge and insight, by the way, so far. You know, before someone's coming for this, the snorkeling adventure, whether they're coming on a cruise ship or however they get there, what are some things that they need to pack or bring? And what do you guys offer? How can somebody prepare for this trip?
For a snorkel trip, they really don't need to bring much. We suggest they bring a towel from the ship, a swimsuit, and an extra pair of socks. The socks help the suit slip on and off easier. So I wear socks under my suit while I'm out there in the water. Keeps my feet a little bit warmer, but it just helps it slip on and off a little bit easier. We're going to pick them up right at the cruise ship dock. So they literally walk off the ship. We're right there, dressed for the weather. Like we say, dress like an onion so you can peel the layers off. You know, if it's pouring down rain, clearly you're going to want to have a raincoat. But, you know, they don't have to stand out in the weather. We're going to pick them up, get them right on our bus, and then bring them to the shop. The shop's 10-minute drive from the cruise ship docks. We got the heat going in there. We dress in our wetsuits, and then we wear our wetsuits out to the site, which is just another mile down the road. So they really don't need to bring a whole lot. You know, towel, swimsuit, awesome. Extra socks, maybe some cash if they want to tip their guides, credit card, or some if they want to purchase t-shirts. But they really don't need to bring a whole lot of things out there with them.
Awesome. Well, that's all I had. Are there things that maybe perhaps I missed that you get questions about all the time, Fred, that you'd like to cover here?
Oh, God. I mean, I do get a lot of questions. Secure storage for their belongings. We basically have places they can store their clothes. It's right in the dressing rooms. It's kind of locker room style. So it's a ladies' side and a men's side. And they leave all their stuff in the shop. So their clothes, their shoes. They can bring cameras, cell phones out to the site. We have an equipment truck. It's like an old U-Haul. And we can lock stuff up in there while we're in the water. But we basically say, don't bring anything down to the beach unless it's going swimming. So we don't want them to bring their cell phones down and set them on the rocks because the tides come up pretty quick. They're more than welcome to bring any of their own snorkeling equipment. We have a lot of folks bring their own masks and snorkels, and that's just great. The one thing we don't really recommend are those full face masks. They don't seal very well with a hood. And because the lenses are plastic and not tempered glass, they fog up constantly. So the folks who've brought a full face mask and adamant that they want to use it, spend 15 to 20 minutes fumbling with it before swapping out to one of ours. So there's a whole thing on full face masks and a lot of drownings and things like that. We do not recommend them. They're not super suitable for our tour, but I think that pretty much covers this. A lot of people are always concerned about missing their ship. We guarantee they're not going to miss their ship. I know how important it is to be back on time. So they're not going to miss their ship. We pick them up right at the cruise ship ports. They don't have to find us. They don't have to pay extra money to get to us. Everything's included. It's a fully all-inclusive tour.
Awesome. Well, that sounds incredible. I hope to personally come out to Alaska and come explore and come play things snorkel and land. And hopefully we'll see you in La Ventana as well.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Trip Outside podcast. If you enjoyed the conversation, let us know in the comments on Apple Podcasts. Share it with your friends and subscribe to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. Also, if you felt inspired to travel, you can support the show by booking your next trip on tripoutside.com, the easiest way to book human-powered outdoor adventures.